Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Chelsea Supplement, the show that goes through the biggest stories of the week and gives you a full detailed look into everything that's happening at Chelsea in the transfer market. This will be the last one before we hit the end of the transfer window, and we'll be busy in the last week, no doubt about it, because it is Chelsea Football Club going absolutely nuts. Now, this week, as you didn't get anybody last week, we thought we'd use this opportunity to introduce you someone who's part of our family. You know, he's someone who gets involved, and you know, he was like a distant cousin, which I didn't see for about 5 years, but you know, now he's back. We're in each other's lives. And he is the co-host of the Chelsea Echo podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Daniel Charles. Round of applause because no one else here. Right, Dan, we're going to talk transfers. I know we did it in the Wolves preview, so everyone's going to be going, you've already spoken a little bit about some of these stories. We did, but the beauty of this part of the show is that we get to talk about it for 45 minutes. Tops. Usually get in half an hour so we can really, you know, get into the niggly bits. And Dan, it's a little bit of a throwback, isn't it? Because for people that didn't know, who maybe be long-time listeners of the pod, me and Dan actually used to do this for whole summers for about 2 years, and we do transfer shows that would last about 5 hours. Do you remember those? We'd literally just end up just delving into them on 100% Chelsea. So it's just like old times, me and Dan talking transfers. So, Dan, we've got a few stories today, right? I'll let you pick where we start, because I've got the list. But I thought, you know what? I'll be nice today. We'll have that structure, but the structure's going to be, you know, simple. And we'll let you take us on this wild goose chase, because I think it is fair to say that's exactly what it is. So we've got five stories. We've got Saudi Airlines for the new sponsorship. We've got Axel Disasi, João Felix, Osimhen / Lukaku, because that's basically one story, and Raheem Sterling. Where would you like to start?
Let's start with the Saudi sponsorship.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Chelsea linked with Saudi Airlines as a brand new sponsor for their shirts heading into this season. Obviously, Chelsea come into another season without a shirt sponsor because I think they expected Champions League football and didn't get it. Dan, thoughts on having a random airline sponsor us for another 6 months and to undoubtedly go into next season without a shirt sponsor again?
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine this is going to get some blowback, I'd assume, for obvious reasons. You know, given the clubs want to be progressive, I guess, or kind of be inclusive, I guess, is the thing. And obviously, we've seen the human rights conversations that have happened around Newcastle United because of their involvement or connection to Saudi. Now, I guess you could kind of argue, well, it's an airline, it isn't a country, but still, it will be something that will be talked about. But I think just all round, the idea that Chelsea still haven't solved their front of shirt sponsorship is farcical, really. The second year in a row this has happened, and you have to ponder exactly what Chelsea are demanding and how an ownership group that touted how amazing they were from a commercial point of view have allowed this to happen 2 years in a row. Now, as someone who likes the design of kits without a sponsor on, I think if you're a fan, it's a unique gift in a sense. It's happened by mistake. It's not happened by design. But of course, the kit last year that I've, obviously people can't see it, but I've got behind my left shoulder here, was much cherished because it was a good design. It had no sponsor on it. And so a lot of people rushed out to buy it as expected. But for a club that wants to be serious, it's not something that can continue to happen. So whether this is the sponsorship or it's someone else, we will see. It's another example of the club not being very well managed at the current point.
No, absolutely. I mean, I'm just reading the article a bit more. For people that wonder, we recorded this straight after our Wolves preview, and we obviously the news came out as we were recording, and there is potential for a conversation still in closed talks between Riyad Air and Chelsea as well. So there's two potential front of shirt sponsors being lined up. Obviously, I believe Riyad Air sponsor Atletico Madrid as well. I mean, there's proven track record with clubs at an elite level there. So I guess that could potentially be a longer term sponsorship. And with that as well, I believe those talks ended early last year because they wanted a longer term deal. But Chelsea obviously wanted to maybe incrementally increase the deal should they have achieved European football at the elite level in the Champions League. So, I mean, we'll have to see what happens. But, I mean, look, I mean, it is farcical, again, that Chelsea have gone into a season without a front-of-shirt sponsor. as Dan said, you know, it does showcase a real lack of forward thinking and a reliance on hitting certain targets, which they themselves have pretty much not allowed to happen because of the transfer strategy. So I just find it incredibly confusing. But realistically, I don't think the sponsor's going to make this season's shirt any better, because I do think it's hideous. Dan, I believe you know somebody that actually designed some really, really nice shirts that won best shirts in non-league one season. Why is that shirt out, by the way? Where is that shirt? It's somewhere.
It's in a transit at the moment. It's making its move. It's having to sort out the medical, but it will be making an appearance at some point this season when it's undergoing its rehabilitation program.
Imperial Wolf shirts that me and Jordan, I can't take all the credit for it. Jordan Charles, who obviously did the Chelsea Echo stuff with us in the past, or he ran our socials. He helped design the Imperial Wolf shirts, so you know. Don't worry, guys. You'll be seeing those again someday. But yeah, you know, Chelsea do need anybody to help design shirts. I know a guy. Aside from that, we will move swiftly on because, you know, we could talk about shirts and shirt sponsors continuously for the next 25 minutes. But this is not a show that is that long. So we'll move on now. And Dan, I'll let you choose again. We've got Axel De Zassi, João Felix, Osimhen, Lukaku and Sterling. Just as a reminder for everybody in the show, pick your next topic.
Let's talk about Axel De Zassi, because I find this one a little bit funny as well. I mean, is it that surprising? And again, you know, I'm maybe this is just a trend I have to go with. So I'll say it right now before we go for the rest of this pod, because I think I'd keep on repeating myself with every kind of transfer story we talk about. But, you know, I go into an assumption and kind of a very basic sporting assumption that when we talk about squad building, we're talking about feasibly wanting to get better players into your squad and selling ones that are not as good. But the more I think about Chelsea, the more I look at Chelsea's summer, it feels less and less like that is the main priority. Now, I won't lose much sleep if Chelsea sell Axel De Zassi. That's not my point. It's more that we bought him in the first place, and a year later, he's already kind of being looked at as someone we can sell. Now, he kind of surprisingly started against Savet. I don't think he'll start against Wolves. And here comes the name. Take a drink now. Trevor Chalobah. Why he's not better than Trevor Chalobah? I knew this 12 months ago. He didn't prove to be better than Trevor Chalobah. So now we're selling a guy that wasn't better than Trevor Chalobah, but we also want to sell Trevor Chalobah.
It's just the look down the lens and they're like, what the fuck? It's just like... Yeah, I mean, look, I guess it opens a door for one potential signing, because there has been rumblings over it across the past few days. I say it's been rumblings, but obviously it kind of helps that this team has run out of levers to pull. And obviously Andreas Christensen is potentially being offloaded by Barcelona. I'm not going to lie, if Chelsea were to sell Axel De Zassi and sell Trevor Chalobah, in my mind there is no doubt that I would turn around and go, okay, go all guns blazing for Andreas Christensen then. Because I think he's definitely someone who would improve the side. But that's obviously, you know, that's by the by. That's rumour. That's speculation. I know that is exactly what transfer news is. But, you know, it's just not materialised yet. In terms of Axel De Zassi, I couldn't agree more. I think my issue with this whole situation with Axel De Zassi is the fact that he has basically been brought in by one of the sporting directors. I think that's the best way to put it, right? Because I've got this whole structure. You've got Win Stanley and you've got Stewart, right? Lawrence Stewart wanted Axel De Zassi as he had him at Monaco. He's brought him in from Monaco. He's proven not to be the right player because they're following a different strategy. But then he's the one who's also laid out the strategy with Paul Win Stanley. And it's just gets more and more and more confusing as time goes on. And that's where I'm looking at this and I'm going, What is going on? Like, what is the actual strategy at Chelsea Football Club? Because
do you think they forget they've bought players? See, that's my theory with some of the players this summer that they've suddenly decided to sell. Diego Moreira, right? They bought him 12 months ago and he's now left. We've sold him to ourselves. Angelo, have we sold Angelo, or is Angelo being talked about as being sold?
He's still being talked about as being sold. So Angelo, I think it was Fenerbahce, were keen on signing him on loan, but Chelsea were more keen on a permanent move. But he was.
I feel the same about Dacre Fofana. Because you got to remember that was one of Win Stanley's first signings. Feels like they've forgotten they even signed him. But then again, I mean, I'm doing the classic like mainstream thing of Chelsea have no plan. The plan clearly is just to try and play a trade, right? And you swap players and you bring him in and you flip him over within like 12 to 18 months. So that's kind of, I mean, that seems to be the strategy. Again, does that factor into making a good competitive football team? I don't know. But that, if people want to talk about the plan, that seems to be the plan. And then it's just kind of player trading at this point. And you bring in players, you try and make a profit on them in a short period of time. And that's about it. So I think De Zerzi falls into that category, right? Like, has his value increased since he moved to Chelsea? I don't think so.
Well, let me check. I don't think it has, but should we check transfer market? Because that's always a good barometer of that. Because then you can check if his value has actually increased at all. And it has, in fact, gone down. His highest market value was 42 million euros. He's now valued at 40 million euros. I mean, I believe that is... I mean, and we signed him for 45. He would actually be something where if Chelsea were to sell him, they'd have to take a hit on him or get the same value. And there's only one club that's been interested so far, and that's Newcastle, who have inquired in Axel De Zerzi to join them. Which, by the way, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I would take the money and run in that situation.
Well, they're only looking at him because they're concerned that the Gerhi deal ain't going to go through, is it? So that's their concern. But then apparently, like, it is. So if the Gerhi deal gets done, then that route, that door shuts, doesn't it? Because they were only looking at him potentially as an alternative. And Gerhi's a significantly better footballer than Axel De Zerzi. So, I mean, it really is like, we can't get our first choice. So let's like look down the list of players we could buy. But yeah, I agree. If Newcastle were seriously in and they offered like 40 million, Chelsea would be silly to not take that money.
Well, I'd argue with that. We've mentioned Andreas Christensen, but then obviously talking about Mark Gahey as well. The fact that Chelsea have, I think, a 20% sell-on fee. That sell-on fee, they're looking at about £60 million for Mark Gahey. So you're looking at about, doing maths and I'm struggling, £48 million quid that would be being pocketed by Crystal Palace, and we'd be getting 12 of that. I'd argue that, to be honest, I'd shift on De Zerzi for the 40 million that's being touted and then spend 8 million and get Mark Gahey. I look at that and I'm like, well, you're going to get 60 million. We'll forego our sell-on fee because obviously we have to if we're buying him. And then you get an unbelievable defender, England international, undoubtedly a player that's going to be a mainstay in that England team now as well, for 48 million quid. And also someone who's captain material and, ironically, fits the system, can play the football. You know, it's something which I'd be looking at anyway. And I think that Axel De Zerzi is just, yeah, he's a battering ram. And
a player we probably should have never sold in the first place.
Well, Mark Gahey's a different one, I feel. I think obviously in hindsight, you'd think, well, the quality is there and he's definitely someone who we maybe shouldn't have sold. But at the same time, I don't think you'd have the Mark Gahey that you have now if he hadn't been sold by Chelsea. If he'd been, you know, under the impression of continuously loaned out, I don't think we'd see the same player, because now he's been at a club in Crystal Palace for a significant period of time where he's been able to bed in and understand how they play and develop. I don't think you'd have got that if we continuously loaned him. And I don't think, if we're going to be brutally honest, look, when we did sell him, it was Marina Granovskaya that did so. And at that period in time, he wouldn't have got in the Chelsea team. It kind of makes sense.
I mean, to be fair though, I mean, it wasn't that long. That was the summer after we won the Champions League. So yeah, I agree. He wouldn't have got in front of Rudiger at the time. However, within like 9 months, we lost Rudiger and Christensen on a free because of the sanctions. And then suddenly we needed to buy a centre-back. Again, hindsight, we went and signed Kalidou Koulibaly. Didn't work out. We signed Wesley Fofana, which we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, you kind of, again, this is where like my frustration, and this is not about the Chelsea ownership now. This is a frustration I had with the previous Chelsea ownership, and the way we talk about Chelsea is it's all in 2 week, 6 week cycles. You've got to think about what your squad's going to look like in 12 to 18 months. And does selling this player right now improve your squad building, save you money in the future, and actually lessens a headache, because then if we keep Mark Gerhi, sure, I understand that him walking straight into the Palace first team and playing week in, week out Premier League football and establishing an understanding and feeling at home in an environment that's clearly supportive to him and his development is obviously that's a huge factor. I'm not saying that it's guaranteed that Mark Gerhi stays at Chelsea and is more of a rotational figure, that he goes on the same path. But at the same time, as a club, you have to also balance it into what your squad needs. And actually, maybe selling this guy right now isn't that smart, because we haven't tied down either of our two senior centre-backs and both of them could leave on a free. If Christensen and Rudiger, we'd sold Gerhi and we had Christensen and Rudiger for like two more years, I could maybe understand that argument a lot more. Not when we lose them like 9 months later.
The sanctions obviously play a massive part in that. Especially, look, no one expected that to happen. No one expected, you know, Russia to invade Ukraine and this situation to occur. So with all of that happening, I think that realistically at that point, I want to bear in mind, Rudiger and Christensen were close to tying down with those contracts. That was true. That was nearly there. And then that happened, which meant the UK government went, well, actually, Chelsea, you can't do anything. So it was just Chelsea becoming victims of circumstance there rather than actually anything happening. I still think that Mark Gerhi would be an option. And I think, you know, obviously there's other players we're going to talk about later. And obviously for people that have already listened to the preview, we were talking about Victor Osimhen and sort of saying you'll have an appeasement almost if you sign a world-class centre-forward. If you were to bring in Victor Osimhen, Mark Gerhi / Andreas Christensen, I think if we're talking specifically about Gerhi and Christensen, you'd appease a large chunk of the fan base that feel that Chelsea have lost their identity, because you have somebody in Mark Gerhi who was an academy product, who was the captain of the academy teams, who's now gone on to be a captain of Crystal Palace, who's an absolutely fantastic defender and definitely, I'd argue, one of the... I'm going to be very controversial and say I think he's one of the top five defenders set at centre-back position in the Premier League, for me. Doing that, you'd be appeasing a lot of people that feel that, one, we're getting an identity back, and two, at the same time, you'd have a player in Mark Gerhi who is also on his way to becoming world class, and that is a trajectory that is there. And the fact that that would also appease the fans that want to see players of quality come into the side. Andreas Christensen, I think he covers one half of that in terms of it's a player where Chelsea fans have a relationship with him and he can come back. The world class fits in the side. He's a very, 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 very good defender. But there are moments with Andreas Christensen, especially after he was turned inside out by Lionel Messi, that a lot of fans kind of went, ooh, okay, I'm a bit worried about him. And also, you know, he might have had one too many laxatives pre-kickoff, which is a big thing for him because he was always ill. We'll have to see what happens with that, but obviously we'll be keeping tabs on that going into the final week of the transfer window. But we'll move swiftly on because we did digress there extremely, well, not extremely slightly, just very slightly. And we'll move on to the next stories. Now, Dan, I'm sensing a pattern here of when I, you know, go through the stories and you just pick the next one, we're just going down the list, so we'll just do that now rather than, you know... let's just do that. Let's just go down the list. Let's talk João Felix. Now, obviously, he has signed for Chelsea now. Signed, sealed, delivered. Had homecoming, Kanye West, as his soundtrack to arriving at Chelsea. For a player that was on loan for 6 months, I think played about seven times. I think that was very interesting, especially for the reason which I'm sure Dan is going to talk about straight away for that deal. So, Dan, let's talk João Felix. Firstly, how do you feel?
See, this is the problem, right? It's hard.
Sorry, he's not fucking half straight away.
There is a part of me that thinks like I don't want to talk down everything that goes on at Chelsea. I just can't lie. I'm sorry. I can't lie about things because it's a waste of time for everyone. There are other places you can find where people are going to be overly positive about everything that happens at Chelsea Football Club. You know, I think that the unfortunate thing about this deal, and I think it's unfortunate for Felix, is that, you know, obviously it's clearly connected to the Conor Gallagher situation. You know, it was originally going to be Samu Amorodium moving in the opposite direction. That all seemed to be done. And then, of course, it falls through. And because of the nature of transfer windows at the moment, and financially, Atletico have had a really big summer, but, you know, financially they can't really afford to just go out and buy a load of players. They need money coming in as well. You know, there is a balanced difference here in terms of who you feel like wins out of these deals more. And I don't think it's Chelsea. Based on where we currently sit, I hope that João Félix proves me and many other doubters wrong and shows the talent and the potential that was there, and actually output that was there very early on in his career at Benfica. And he proves to be a really good player who settles and develops. And because there's no denying, when I watched Félix right in front of my own eyes when he was on loan, that he's a very talented footballer. He can do things on the pitch that I think a lot of players can't. But it's in that first, he reminds me a little bit of Kovacic in the sense where, and of course, ironically, Kovacic did have the end product for once, but it was against Chelsea. Félix will do things that make the crowd go ooh and ah, right? But once it gets into that key moment where he has to make the right pass, he has to put the shot in the top corner. You know, you have to make that clinical move. And that's not me saying that Félix is a crap player, because really, that, you know, the difference between being a decent or right player to being one of the best, that's the difference, right? That's what differentiates, you know, what made Diego Costa such a wonderful footballer for Chelsea, what made Drogba such a wonderful footballer for Chelsea. I know we're talking about strikers here, but, you know, when you get into that final moment, you know, those decision makers, that composure that you need, unfortunately, seems to let Félix down more than not. And I feel like for a player, I mean, in terms of if we're just very clinically asking what Chelsea's squad needs, what this squad does not need is another player who arguably you're not quite sure where his best position is kind of in the area that Nkunku and Palmer already are operating in, and I'd rather have those two players in front of him. I just fear that in 12 months' time, we're going to look back at this move as one that really was kind of just out of convenience and wasn't one that radically improved what we needed. He's not a player that I personally find that engaging. I'm not a big fan of comps that show you everything up until the most important point. You know, I value players' output. It's why Jackson, despite all the criticism of him, we spoke about it in our preview for the Wolves game. You know, when you're putting 17 goals on the board for your first Premier League season, that's, you can't argue against that. You can't argue against those numbers. And that's also not taking penalties. Félix, for me, I feel like there's a aesthetic preference for him, which in some ways I can understand, where people want to see players that do flair and kind of showboaty things. But at the end of the day, Félix for me is going to be defined by the numbers he puts up on the board. He's going to be defined by how many games of football are won by his influence, rather than how many nice things he does that can be put on the showboat. But, you know, does it make us a better team? I'm not entirely sure.
Definitely is a marriage convenience here. Look, I think João Félix for me didn't really show enough in his first stint at Chelsea, but I do also feel that comes down to an incredibly rash decision that he made in his very first game, which I actually think cost him those opportunities. Because in that first opportunity that he had, we did see a player that picked up the ball, that was driving into space. And I think, especially considering how that season was going, like, he was in competition with Kai Havertz, who I think everyone at that point had become extremely tired of because of how lackluster he was in terms of his movement. João Félix offered something. And I think, look, I'm trying to find the positives in this move. I think for me that he does offer something in terms of just that movement, which I don't think we've actually seen so far in pre-season or this season, of someone who can ignite the fans and can seize his opportunities. Having said that, though, we have seen Christopher Nkunku being, you know, forced to play out wide, where we haven't really seen the best of him because that's not where he plays. João Félix probably is somebody who will be seeing on the left. You know, him and Cole Palmer, I think, as the wide players, I think do offer something. Whereas Christopher Nkunku, I think, is limited to being either the lone front man or playing as a second striker. Obviously, João Félix, you know, can play those positions as well. That's probably where he's stronger. But at the same time, when you put him on Nkunku as an option there, Christopher Nkunku is the player that literally will start ahead of him every single time. I think the quality is there and it's proven. I think, in terms of the choice between Samuel Mourodion or João Félix for that marriage convenience as well, I think João Félix is the obvious answer. I really do. I think the quality between the two of them is so much more apparent. And I think he obviously does have the experience as well. You know, Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, Benfica, Chelsea. You know, he played at clubs with names. And I think that being able to carry that weight is important now in the players that we bring in, because we can't just keep bringing in, you know, another Mark Gooey, another Nicholas Jackson. You know, these are lads which need to have the people around them that have played at those elite levels that can carry the weight of playing at a big club. And maybe he hasn't put up the numbers that people expect. And I as you said, I really hope he does as well, because I agree with you. I do think that there was a lot of opportunities which he didn't seize, but I'm really putting that down to circumstance. And I'm hoping that now we can see a player who can come into the side and really, really prove his mettle and prove his worth. But as you've said, Palmer and Nkunku, João Félix, Pedro Neto, Mikhailo Mudryk, Noni Madueke. Blimey, that's six names already. And these are names which are players that could walk into Premier League sides, whether that be as a starter or as part of that squad. Are those six names, and obviously we'll chuck Raheem Sterling in there for the sake of the conversation, you know, six, seven names which you can keep happy, can allow the squad to develop and create that nurturing environment for all of them to flourish? And I'm not sure you can.
Well, and also I think, sure, Félix has played at a lot of big clubs, but I think it says a lot that, you know, there was a lot of analysis about the Atletico move, right, where a lot of it early on was being put on Simeone. Simeone plays a outdated style of football. He plays a brand of football that isn't in keeping with the progressive trend we're going in Europe, and he's really underserving João Félix. And the problem is, over the course of his time there, now added with some loans to Chelsea and Barca, I think the more time went on, it felt less and less like Simeone was the one underperforming. It felt more and more like Félix was the one who wasn't stepping up. Because, you know, the argument I make is that you can be in bad environments, you can be in unstable environments, but if you see, my problem with Félix is, if people regarded Félix and presented him and promoted him as a flashy player who is going to give you some nice moments over the course of a season, and, you know, isn't your star, isn't the main man, has some limitations, but, you know, is all right as a squad player, then I think I'd be a lot more forgiving of him. The problem is, Félix has been branded as this astonishingly good talent that is significantly better than everyone else Chelsea could either develop internally or have, and needs to be protected, needs to be showcased, needs to be coddled. When I see a player that just is falling so below decent levels of output, that's where I think the conversation and the criticism of Félix has come, which to some may seem a little bit harsh, because when you build up a player at this high level and you claim he's some absolutely astonishing talent, and then I watch him, NFTs get sold as, like, a couple of years ago were being sold as these great genius things, and then you realise that they were just like a JPEG you could easily download onto your computer. So why are people paying thousands of pounds for them, for something you can buy for free or something you can get for free? So that's my concern with Félix, is that it's going to be another kind of fiery player in a fiery season, where we spend a lot of time talking about what Félix could be rather than what he actually is. He needs to prove that now. Like, I think this is last chance saloon for João Félix. If he does not settle, if he doesn't prove to be an amazing player, there's no more arguments about, well, this isn't really his home. Oh, you know, he isn't clearly wanted here. No, he's been presented. It's hilarious him being presented as if a homecoming at Chelsea. I mean, this guy was on loan for 4 months. I mean, not even 6 months. I think it's 4 months, wasn't it? And he barely played like that much because, as you said, he got suspended for a couple of games early on. He needs to prove his worth. If he does, I'm not someone that denies reality. If I'm always happy to be proven wrong about a player if it means Chelsea are winning games, and if he's scoring goals, I'm going to be celebrating those goals, and we'll be singing his praises on this podcast.
No, absolutely. I think that is the case. I do think, as you said, the homecoming thing was, it was a real slap in the face. I felt that with for Connor as well, because I really did, obviously Chelsea, I think a big thing for João Félix here as well. Massive social media audiences, extremely marketable, speaks several languages. I think that's a big reason why he's here as well. And that whole homecoming thing is going to be there to sell shirts, right? To say that in the marriage convenience for a player that's been at Chelsea for 18 years, supports the club, grew up 10 minutes away, and then basically, and also, by the way, their really emotional goodbye on socials. And obviously, I know, look, the media team is not the person who sell the players, right? So, and look, having spoken to people in who work in media teams for West Ham, for Brentford, for Chelsea, for lots of clubs, it's hard to be part of those media teams because you are, unfortunately, the meat shields of circumstance. And I think a lot of people in the Chelsea media team would have meant what they were saying to Conor Gallagher, fantastic, thank you so much, all this sort of stuff. But the reality is, the way that the club had treated Conor Gallagher as he was going out the door, look, we can argue all day whether or not it was good to sell him or bad to sell him. What we can all agree on is how he was treated was not good. The way that the club spanned that exit and said goodbye and all that sort of stuff, and it was supposed to be really heartfelt and meaningful, you can tell it was a marketing ploy. And it was a tool. And it was something where it was just a case of, we need to look good. It was very much a case of, this is the brand identity, stick to this guideline, this is this. It was a situation where it did, I think for me especially, and for you, Dan, I know, there was a bittersweet taste to it. Because you see that and you see homecoming with João Félix and you're like, as you said, a handful of games for Chelsea. It's the marriage convenience to get rid of a player who has been here for such a long time. I think that's why, for me personally, that I'm a bit meh. As I said in the preview, I'm very blasé about Chelsea at the moment. I feel that it's very much a case of, okay, well, they've got to deliver now. Let's see what happens here. I mean, numbers-wise as well with João Félix, look, I mean, if I look at it now, I'll just get the numbers up for us to look at. João Félix for Chelsea in his previous stint played 16 games. 16 games for Chelsea. And at that point, Chelsea were out of both the cups as well. I mean, 16 games, 4 goals. I mean, you just kind of shrug, don't you? It's like, it is what it is. As Dan said, you know, I think we all, if he's scoring the goals, look, well, we won't be complaining. That's very much a case of, I think, what me and Dan are very good at is when we can hold our hands up and go, yeah, okay, fair enough. That's worked out and, you know, gone the way we hope it does. But we'll move swiftly on now. As we are coming towards the end of the show, we've got a couple more stories to dissect. And I say a couple more stories because these stories we've already kind of briefly spoken about in the preview, but we can look at in a little bit more detail. Now, as I said, we're recording this on the Friday, so things could change very, very quickly. And that is the beauty of the transfer market. But Chelsea and Napoli are obviously discussing Victor Osimhen and discussing Romelu Lukaku. Now, Romelu Lukaku, the Napoli sporting director, has been in London this week and he has offered £25 million for Chelsea for Romelu Lukaku. They have very politely said no. They want £34 million they value him at. And then, of course, the loan to obligation to buy for Victor Osimhen could be being discussed, but apparently Victor Osimhen is not particularly keen on that situation. Dan, I mean, look, it's a transfer saga, so I don't think there's very much more we can add to this conversation. But with the window coming to a close very, very soon, Victor Osimhen, if you're in his position, you'd bite the bullet, right? I think at this point, especially with, you know, Napoli being so openly keen on Romelu Lukaku and that move looking like it's going to materialise, you'd think that realistically his options are limited, right?
And obviously there's been kind of a very not subtle PR campaign or open secret about his affection for Chelsea, kind of pushed by John Obi Mikel on his podcast that's been going on for several months. I remember Didier went and there was a video with both of them at AFCON, you know, kind of shaking hands. And at the time people were passing the torch and all of that stuff. And of course it's very easy on social media to kind of spin that and get people excited about it. If you're someone that really wants this deal to happen, I think the thing I would say is that it's always kind of a classic, you know, something has to give at the end of the day. And when you've got kind of two sides pushing for the same thing, Osimhen probably already feels like with Sterling, and you know, you can make a parallel to the Sterling and Chilwell cases, right? Like if you're not being involved, if you don't feel no longer part of the club financially, it'd be better if you're not here. Do you, from a human level, do you really want to be in that environment anymore? Moving to a club where, as we said on the Wolves preview, if it, you know, if Osimhen signs for Chelsea, he would probably be treated, and I think generally in the transfer market, would be treated as one of the biggest signings of the summer, if not the biggest signing of the summer. Chelsea would, I'm sure, make out he's you know, the biggest player. So I feel on that sense, you know, would he be given the number nine shirt? I think that, you know, that'd be something that I'm sure that the club would want to market. It's just like everyone wants to run away from it at Chelsea.
Not. I don't like that shirt. I hate that number.
So, I think it's just a wait and see, unfortunately. I feel like Lukaku will leave because it happens every single summer. That, I think, one will get done. It's just on the Osimhen one, whether Chelsea feel that they want to commit. There comes a point, and I've written about this over the summer, that, you know, if you want to buy the best players, there just is kind of a reality, unfortunately, you have to spend a lot of money. There's the market is not changing. Even though PSR, FFP, the top players, and they should have known this before trying to negotiate and brief about how Merkel Elise was their big target, players will demand high salaries. As we've said before, as has been clear, Chelsea, if they need Champions League football, you know, there is a level of logic to go out and buy some of the best forwards. It potentially gets you 6 to 9 more points. Where does that leave you at the end of the season? Does it leave you in third, fourth place, and that gets you Champions League football, when in financially the club are maybe out of a hole in a little bit? Is it another marriage of convenience? But I think this marriage of convenience feels much more like it's weighted in Chelsea's favour, obviously, compared to the Felix and Gallagher ones. It would be huge, but I still am kind of doubtful whether it actually gets done. It's one of those I have to see it to believe it. You know, I'm not someone that is firmly kind of believing this will get over the line, because as we've seen from Chelsea, they're not just going to willingly commit tons to a player as they did in the past under the previous ownership.
I think that they've kind of feel a little bit stung after the very first summer transfer window with Raheem Sterling, Kalidou Koulibaly, Pierre Aubameyang, which I think everyone always forgets we had him. I forget we had him sometimes. You know, you look at those players and think, okay, these are senior players who Chelsea brought in, maybe not always big fees, but on big wages, and they didn't deliver. You know, we have to maybe, I mean, for me, I think that Victor Osimhen is, look, in terms of the answers we're looking at, seems like Saudi Arabia have pulled away from Victor Osimhen, because that was obviously one of the places he was looking at going to. PSG have pulled out of the race for Victor Osimhen because they don't want to pay for him. His options right now are stay in Naples and rot, I think is probably the best way to put it, because I think he's not going to be playing football, because, you know, realistically, as you said, Romelu Lukaku, Chelsea want to get rid of him. I think they will bite the bullet at about 30 million rather than 25, 34, meet in the middle. Look, I'd just take that and be like, let's just crack on with that, lads. And then obviously that's £300,000 a week in wages off the books. Obviously, the wages for Victor Osimhen have come out in terms of what we're going to be looking at roughly. I think with that as well, look, it pays for itself. I just think that Chelsea needs to take the obligation and just crack on, really. I do think that is probably the safest bet, because, like you said, 6 to 9 more points. As we were saying in the preview, I mean, you've said, and with the Zassi earlier, you think there's a top 7, right? I'm thinking there's, as I said, the top 10's maybe, I say 10 because I think Chelsea are in the middle of that pack currently, because so we're looking down as well as up. You know, I think you're looking at, if we're saying those top 10, for me, it's Arsenal, Man City, Liverpool, Chelsea, United, Newcastle, Villa, and then you're looking down at Palace probably. Fulham seem to have stabilised as well as a stable mid-table Premier League team, and I definitely feel like I'm forgetting another potential team in there. But, you know, there are side Spurs, of course. I set you up for that one. That went so well. That's exactly what I wanted. You know, we've got, you know, 10 sides there. I think Palace are obviously more of an outsider as a Fulham. So it's maybe an 8 rather than a 10. But Chelsea are not currently a side which I feel are towards the top end of that. If you're looking at the top 4, I think that 6 of those teams are comfortably ahead of Chelsea. If you bring in a Victor Osimhen, how does that conversation change? I genuinely feel if you bring in a Victor Osimhen, Chelsea finish top four this year. If Victor Osimhen comes in.
Just a quick, because, you know, we don't want to sort of repeat what we said about Sterling, but, you know, you can almost look at it from a, again, this is more PR, maybe than actual reality. If you sell Sterling and you get his wages off the books, and then you're putting in Lukaku's wages off the books, and then you're signing a younger player in Osimhen, who, from a profile-wise, is kind of what, arguably, in theory, again, not in execution, we don't know how Osimhen would work at Chelsea, is what Chelsea have needed for a long time. Again, I think that would, no matter what reservations I have, it'd be hard to argue that everyone at the club and around the club would feel negative about Osimhen coming in. And you could kind of spin it as, I could see them saying it, an Athletic or a David Ornstein piece, saying, well, you know, Chelsea felt that getting the wages of Raheem Sterling and Lukaku off the books as older players and bringing in a young striker as their new star of Victor Osimhen was kind of the smarter thing. And unlike a lot of those glossy briefings this summer, which haven't landed at all, because logically we keep on looking at the squad and going, no, I'm sorry, like, from a footballing point of view, it looks like we're getting weaker, not better. I think it would be the first time you could actually look at it and go, okay, I can understand that, right? And it's actually addressing a key area of your squad.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. And we'll keep tabs on that as everything goes on. And I'm excited. The last week of the transfer window, and transfer windows is always my favourite time to cover Chelsea, because it is always so busy, but you learn so much. And I look, as a man with a degree in football business, right, I love it. Apart from this year where I got a little bit confused.
Louis Benavente loves that ticker, doesn't he? He loves the yellow ticker.
Oh, I do. I see it come up and I'm like, yes. Transfers, we love it. And but then with that as well,
nothing gets Louis out of bed faster than a Jim White exclusive.
Oh mate, Jim, oh what a man he is. Absolutely, I can't wait to be delivering those exclusives. But do you know what, he's not my favorite Scotsman, Dan. Do you know who my favorite Scotsman is?
Simon McGovern.
Yes.
There we go. Yes.
What a man he was. Simon McGovern on Daniel Child, Son of Chelsea, doing the commentary.
The man, the myth, the McGovern.
Oh, man, what a fella. Again, people who've been around a long time will know about that, and I don't know how many of them are actually listening. I think, look, realistically, we'll keep tabs, you let you know after that, but we'll go on to our last story before we wrap up, and I have one more question for Dan after that last story. Raheem Sterling. Now, Juventus, Crystal Palace, Aston Villa, all linked with a move for the... I'm not sure if he's in England or a former England international at this point in his career. But Raheem Sterling is looking like he could be on his way out of the door at Chelsea, which came as a little bit of a shock, I think, after pre-season. But Dan, we touched on it briefly during the preview for Wolves. You're Raheem Sterling. You are on a cushy wage. You feel you might be able to break into the first team, but the politics of the situation and signings where Chelsea have massively overspent may not allow for that to happen. You've been left out of the Euro squad for England, despite being a mainstay over the previous 10 years, really. What do you do in his position? Do you stay or do you go?
I think clearly it's been reported, right, very quickly that he wants to leave now. He's looking for a permanent move away. You know, it's the best thing for him. You know, it's the best thing for Chelsea. Financially, it's understandable why they want to get those wages off the books. I think Chelsea want to sprint as fast away from the 2022 summer transfer window as they can. Obviously, Sterling is one of the last ones surviving out of that. Obviously, we've still got Cucurella and Fofana, I think, would then be left from that. Maybe I'm missing someone, but I think everyone else is no longer at the club. And for him too, I mean, it's just, you know, he clearly isn't in the plans anymore. If he has any aspirations of getting back into the England team, I mean, I still kind of ponder whether he'd be able to. It's not that at that age it's completely impossible, or maybe a new coach comes in and because it's no longer Southgate and a route is back in. But I sort of feel like Sterling's England days are kind of behind him now. You've got to look at the next generation of players coming through. Anthony Gordon on the left side, I think, is going to be a big player. Cole Palmer is obviously going to get more minutes if he continues to progress. Eze too, I think I'm excited to see what he could do. I know not all of these players play at left wing, but in terms of feasible positions on the pitch where these players will be getting minutes. It, you know, Sterling is competing with kind of those attackers, right? And I'm probably missing quite a few names out there. Yeah, for Sterling's sake, it's just about getting out of the environment at this point. And hopefully for Chelsea, the finances are in the right place, and it ain't going to be Saudi. I don't think he ever wanted to move to Saudi anyway. I could see Villa being a great destination for him. And for them, you know, for a Champions League pedigree player, for a player who I think would improve their squad. You got to remember they lost Diaby this summer, who went to one of the few signings that did go to Saudi. So I think that would improve their squad. It just feels like the right time to kind of cut ties, doesn't it? And with that wage, he's kind of he's not the only outlier, but he is the biggest obvious outlier to Chelsea's wage structure. And he's kind of trying to think of the right phrase. But every time, you know, the longer Sterling is around and Chelsea are trying to argue that they can't pay high wages to people, if you're a player, you look, well, you've got Raheem Sterling sat there on 300k a week. Why am I not worth that? So I can understand from a Chelsea point of view, they want to get Sterling out as the anomaly. And he's not on an incentivized wage. That's a guaranteed wage he's had since the summer of 22. Obvious solution, he leaves. And I just hope that in a couple months' time, you know, we're looking at the attack. It'd be a horrible situation. And I've been a fan of Sterling before he even came to Chelsea, right? But I think it'd be a horrible scenario. And if a couple months' time, we're looking at the attack and thinking, should we have let Sterling go? I want to be in a position where Mudryk starts producing, Felix is producing on a regular basis, Neto is producing. So then really you can look at that bunch of attackers that we have and go, we made the right decision cutting ties with Raheem Sterling.
No, I think that's absolutely the case. I think he's not produced what everyone expected him to. And I think whenever you speak to a Manchester City fan, Raheem Sterling was a player who was an important cog in a system, but wasn't the main man in those systems. You know, there was people producing around him and he kind of chipped in wherever he could. He's come to Chelsea and Chelsea asked him to be the main man, to be a leader in the squad. And there's a multitude of opportunities over the past 2 years where Chelsea fans look at where he could have squared a ball or he could have made a better decision. And for a man who's hitting 29, who is a player, again, as you said, of Champions League pedigree, who fails to make decisions which, you know, 21, 22-year-olds are making at a senior level in football, you do sit there and you go, okay, well, as you said, 300 grand a week guaranteed. You're not hitting those targets, mate. We expect you to hit certain levels. And thank you very much. We'll see you later. I think, look, realistically, we'll keep tabs on where he's going. I mean, I'm actually intrigued where he's odds on to go. Well, it seems like Aston Villa are currently, as we record, are the favourites to sign him. So I think that's a good move for Chelsea. I mean, I'd be intrigued to see how they go with their PSR situation in Aston Villa. But, you know, only time will tell. We'll be keeping tabs on the window as things develop with Raheem Sterling and all these other players that we've spoken about. But Dan, one last question before we finish. All right. The transfer window ends now. Right, that all of a sudden everything closes up. Chelsea have signed João Félix as their last signing of the summer. Chelsea are doing no more business. How would you rate this window out of 10?
I think it's got to be a 3 or 4. It's not a good transfer window. We have excommunicated and decided, I think fundamentally we've decided to make our squad weaker, not stronger. And, you know, if that's the base level point of a transfer window, Chelsea have failed based on what I can see currently. From where they were at the end of last season, not all those players potentially have got permanent moves away, but the fact that Petrovic isn't having a look in, Trevor Chalobah, Conor Gallagher, it's not, and the signings we've made have not been level raisers. I think they all have, nearly all of them, with the exception of Pedro Neto and maybe João Félix, we'll see how Félix does, you know, are not players that, you know, stand out to you as ones that, wow, like that really makes a difference. A lot of them are kind of in kind of the blue co model of maybe looking to turn those players on in 12 to 18 months for a profit. So I can't say this has been a good transfer window for Chelsea. It really hasn't. I think it hasn't built on what was there at the end of last season. And to be honest, I think Chelsea could have done, I've given them a 4 for what they've done. If Chelsea did literally barely anything in the transfer window, kept most of the players, maybe signed Neto, I think my judgment would have been a 7 or 8. You know, and that kind of sums up, you know, my lack of faith in Chelsea's transfer business, because Chelsea did not need to go out this summer and spend a load. They just didn't, because they'd already bought a load. And it's kind of hard to judge the true quality of the squad. But the fact you've actively gone out of your way to, I think, let go valuable players and not replace them with significantly better ones, based on what I can see, not a great transfer window, is it?
No, I get that. No, I mean, having said that, and I agree with you, if it was so now that it has been a very lacklustre window, should Raheem Sterling go out the door? Should Victor Osimhen come through the door? Should Lukaku go out the door? If those three moves happen, I do think it hits a 7 or an 8. Now, I think Chelsea will have addressed a massive area. They'll have seen players leave that were massive issues in terms of their wages. And only time will tell. But we'll have to see what happens. But guys, that has been the Chelsea supplement. Dan and I are now going to go and watch the Wolves game and try not to cry, given Chelsea's history there. If only there was a man on the touchline with pedigree at that stadium, then there'd be less worries. Aside from that, guys, this has been the Chelsea Supplement. Make sure you tune in later on today on X, obviously formerly known as Twitter, for the final score show with the score rambles. And I'm sure myself and maybe Dan will make an appearance, depending on how that game goes. But this has been the Chelsea Echo. Make sure you give us a 5-star review on all good platforms. Big thank you to Dan for coming on to the Chelsea Supplement. We'll be back on Friday for your preview of the next Premier League game. But this has been the Chelsea Echo, and we'll see you guys later. Ta-da.